listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to noon, my guests and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Today, we're going to be talking about residential treatment for troubled youth. Joining us is Brian Pace and Todd Hockenberry from Red Rock Canyon School in St. George, Utah. Brian has a master's degree in education and mental health counseling and has been involved with Red Rock Canyon School since 1999, becoming its executive director in 2004. Todd is the admissions director of Red Rock and has been with the program for 10 years, giving him 25 years of related experience with youth treatment and correctional programs. Todd is a licensed substance abuse counselor and has 7 children ranging from 2 to 18 years old. Gentlemen, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Alan. Thanks for having us.
Well,
thanks, Alan.
Hey, it's good to have you. I mentioned about the fact that it's residential treatment, and for our listeners that aren't familiar with the term, briefly explain what it is and why it has become so beneficial to many at-risk youth.
Okay. Alan, the residential treatment that we have here in St. George at Red Rock Canyon School is a treatment center that provides a milieu of academic solutions as well as mental health solutions and residential living. While they're here in the residential treatment world, they get a mixture of positive peer culture where they interact with each other. They get to go out in community services. It's a community-based program here, so they're out and active in the community. They've got one foot in treatment and one foot in reality. They're getting their mental health services met here, or they get their therapy services met, their academic services met, and a basic residential living structure. It's about a 9 to 12 month stay here, and it's worked out well for adolescents at risk because it becomes more of a family environment for them. They have peers working with each other and helping each other in the program rather than always an authoritarian approach, more therapeutic in nature. And so the milieu that we create here is a positive milieu and culture for the students to get back on track, again, whether that's in academics, whether that's in a daily structural living, or in the mental health world.
Okay, well, I mean, tell me a little bit about, I was reading a little bit. Now, who is CARE, and what are the programs associated with CARE, Brian?
CARE is our umbrella corporation. The programs that are underneath CARE are Red Rock Canyon School, which is a co-ed school, ages 12 to 18, located in St. George, Utah. We also have another program under CARE, which is called Falcon Ridge Ranch, which is a single-sex program, females only, which is close to the mouth of Zion's National Park. We currently have 2 other programs that have been approved to open. They are not occupied yet, but they will be sometime later this year.
Now, Todd, although I'm familiar with Red Rock Canyon, tell us a little bit about what makes it unique.
Well, the main thing that makes Red Rock Canyon School unique and even Falcon Ridge is the idea that we follow positive peer culture. Positive peer culture, in its truest form, it lets the kids struggle a little bit in a safe environment. We want to see what the real kid is going to be like. It's easy to put a kid into a program where it's going to be completely controlled by the adults, and so they're going to try to force these kids to change. And through, hopefully through enough carrots dangling in front of them that they will change for the program, but the long-lasting effects you don't see. With Red Rock Canyon School's approach, we have the kids help each other out. And so when a new kid comes in, they're assign a mentor, which is a kid that's getting ready to go home. They help them buy into the program. They help them buy into the staff, which staff are good to talk to about certain problems with Renzard. And it's a non-punitive approach, highly therapeutic. That way you get to the root of the problems And you're also able to put back onto the kids some ownership of the problem. You know, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in treatment anymore. Okay, then what do you need to do to move forward and get out? You need to be real and sincere about whatever change you need to make so that you can go home. And that's what really stands out over and over again is the term care and concern, and that's what we want them to learn is care and concern for themselves so they can show care and concern for another individual and that will carry them forward when they get home.
That sounds great. Now, I know there are some differences. Brian, tell us about a little bit more about Falcon Ridge and what makes it unique in itself.
Okay. Now, Falcon Ridge Ranch is a therapeutic ranch that provides a project course for every student that comes up there. Each student has an opportunity to write a treatment plan for this project course. They work with horses in an equine setting, and I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with equine therapy, but it's equine-based. It's the most equine-integrated therapeutic program that I've seen, where each student is involved on a daily level of equine activities. Like I said, they each get their project horse. They do experiential learning while they're out there. They're involved in the daily farming, ranching aspects of taking care of animals, again, from horses to chickens to actually a herd of cattle. So they get to experience all of that from growth to actually weaning of the mothers and the small animals. And so 45 head of horses that are out there. There's 22 beds for females, so we have a good herd to work through. Not only do we have the equine piece to it, but we have very highly structured therapeutic daily living as well. So it's the idea of being on a ranch is therapeutic, and actually the activities that come with that, and again with the equine piece, very strong, works well with trauma victims. Very nice piece to that program.
Well, Brian, talk a little bit about how that benefits, in this case, the girls when they're working with a horse and when they're having to kind of see what makes that horse, you know, what motivates them in to do a particular thing. In other words, there's a bond that comes and that there's a learning that they get from that that helps them to maybe see their own relationship with their parents.
Okay. Yeah, with their project course, they've got to come out and put together a treatment plan, and they've got a first step is build a relationship with that horse, and they put him in a round pen and try to develop and walk him and try to develop the relationship with the horse. And what we call, they have to have both eyes and ears, and that's an indication that the horse has built a relationship with him when both eyes and ears are on the student. Most of the time, horses will just have one ear, one eye, on you and not really listen, you're not really a relationship, and we relate that to their peers or their family members, their parents, whoever that may be, is how many of your peers or parents have one ear, one eye and not really listening, sort of listening, but they develop a relationship where they have both ears and eyes and have that respect and relationship, which is where they start. They do that in a round pen again because there's no corners to hide. It's just a continual movement until a relationship is built. Once that is done, pending on the student, we give them that project course that may be something related to their diagnosis or their behavior coming in. We've had some that are oppositionally defiant that we've told the student to work with the horse and say, you've got about 30 days to work with this horse, otherwise we're probably going to ship it out because they're just not conforming, they're not behaving, basically they're not doing what they're supposed to do. And this begins to start to work and build that relationship, and you find them at times trying to scream and yell at the horse to get them to conform, like eat, walk, whatever it may be, and then you find the student say, wow, I sound just like my parents or my
mm-hmm.
father.
Right, right. And it sounds like when you say ship the horse out, it sounds like the child really feels like they're trying to save this horse's life by getting them to conform and to understand what they need to do.
And then that's correct, Alan. They are trying to save their life and just have some healthy living, whether that be eating correctly. And so, yeah, you know, and they realize they transform that back to their parents going, this sounds just like my parents trying to save my life. And so they really hits home very powerful thinking for them. We have others that, you know, that have struggled eating, and so we have the student put together a little project and try to get the mare to eat, an older mare, and try to eat so they can manage and care for themselves. But the student then realizes that they may not be able to do that unless they take care of themselves correctly first, where they have to manage what they eat and eat healthy and whatnot. So a very powerful teaching moment for the horse and the student.
Yeah, I agree. Now, Todd, and I know that you mentioned a little bit, I think, in regards to the positive peer culture. How do you implement it directly into the program?
Well, just a little history on the positive peer culture. Two gentlemen took over a detention center in the late 60s, early 70s, where in Michigan, where there was a lot of violence going on. And they said, let's try this different approach, which is positive peer culture. And everybody thought they were crazy. Well, within a couple of months, they had everything straightened out and calmed down. The way that you implement positive peer culture is, like I said earlier, you let them struggle a little bit. You let them realize that, hey, I'm going to make some mistakes. The easiest way to kind of explain it is when a new kid comes in, like I said, we have a mentor for him that's going to help him learn what the rules are and what can help them get through the program faster and all that other stuff, because that's what they're going to try to do. And there's no levels, but there's phases of change that we watch for. The first phase is called casing, where they're just trying to figure things out. You know, how's this place really run? What do I need to do to get out of here? The second phase is called limit testing, where they kind of realize, hey, you know what? I know what you're saying, but I'm going to try it my own way anyway. All defiant kids are going to run into that exact same thing, because eventually they're going to replace one authority for another authority. Once they've kind of worked through the limit testing a little bit, they move into what's called polarization of values, where they're having more good days than bad, where they're going back and forth. Maybe I should change, maybe I shouldn't change. And then it goes into positive peer culture, where they're actually functioning as a group. The way that is implemented is every day, at the end of the day, end of the school day, we go into positive peer culture group, where the group itself is ran by the students. There's a staff member in there to take notes and keep it from getting out of hand. But they run the group, they talk about their own issues, and they go around and they offer solutions for the other students. If somebody's really struggling, somebody had a bad phone call, there's something going on at home, at the end of the group, we can award them the group. If they say, I don't want the group, they can say, I don't want the group, and walk away from the group, and they'll go take a walk with another staff, take a time out. When they get back with the kids later on, they're going to say to their friends, hey, you know, why didn't you back me up in there? Why didn't you say I didn't need the group or whatever? And then the kids will say, hey, you know, what we do, what we talk about in group is what happens in group. And so they can have a group right then and there to deal with that solution and come up with it. And it just it works really well helping them understand that they really are in control, and it's more of an internal process instead of an external pushing and pulling and tugging and whatever you got.
Well, now define for those that may not know where you're awarding them the group. Define what that means.
Awarding the group means you got a student that's just, like I said, he's having a, let's say his grandfather died, and he's really struggling, but he's not showing it on the outside. He's not, you know, everybody knows he's struggling. They may say, hey, Johnny, we think that you need a little bit more attention in the group.
Okay, so it's a focus. It's a focus thing. In other words, within the group, there's a lot of people having different issues, and you're saying, we're going to focus on yours right now. That's what awarding the group is. We're going to focus on yours. We're going to help you through this.
Exactly.
Okay, great. So anyway, yeah, go ahead. I think the positive peer culture is one of the things, and I'm glad you brought up the history of it, because it's one of the things that I think has sort of revolutionized the way in which programs like yours work with kids and get them involved, and they gain the benefit of not only in this situation having the group awarded to them and having it focus on them, but being on the other end where they're learning how to help people with their other people with their issues.
Yeah, you know, the most important thing about the positive peer culture is the book is written by Harry Verrath and Larry Bentrell, and it's not a difficult read. You can still pick it up on Amazon. And it's a common sense kind of thing, and so sometimes the people think, it can't be that easy. But it really is. Sometimes we make it more difficult. And it is a lot harder to work in a positive peer culture environment because as adults, we want to just jump in and, you know, fix the problem. You know, what did you speak? You didn't talk back to me. I know you didn't talk back to me. But in a positive peer culture environment, we kind of allow that process to go forward and see how far it's going to go. The most important thing we want to see is if a kid smarts off to an adult, for them to catch himself and say, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. That was disrespectful. Sometimes you don't get that, and then you get the peer saying, you know, you shouldn't have talked to John that way. He's a good staff. And then sometimes you get the staff that have to say, you know what, I didn't get offended by that, but, you know, you probably shouldn't talk to authority that way. And just depending on how that kid accepts that feedback is how much you see him grow.
Right. Right. And it sounds like it comes down to responsibility. You have other people around you that are helping you to take responsibility for your own actions.
Absolutely.
All right. That's great. Now, Brian, when we were talking a little bit about care, but I mean, tell me a little bit, what sets care apart, you know, from other programs? You know, what are some of the differences?
You know, with care, the differences for me that comes to mind is it's one owner.
Mm-hmm.
The owner is, you know, has control over all the programs that are being developed. And so there's not, still has a family, small, intimate feel, run at that level. So one, that sets it apart for me, in working with the owner, that you're right here on a daily basis, working with him, making decisions with him. So it still has that family, intimate feel to it in all the programs, rather than dealing with maybe multiple owners. With the care organization, it's just one owner, has been in the business for quite some time, as well as with my history as well, that we're able to work together and make the programs that we feel are needed and unique for certain types of population.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, Todd, what about extracurricular activities? And, Todd, and I don't mean yours personally. I mean, you've got seven kids. I think we know yours. Let's talk about the kids and what's set up for them.
Hey, I caught that joke.
Hey, I've met your kids, so I know I can get away with that.
Yeah. Hey, the extracurricular activities, we want to find something that they can take with them, some kind of hope, coping skill that they can take with them, something that's more positive than what they were doing before. And so we have arts and crafts, dance. We actually have a music studio with a full soundboard. We gave you a copy of the CD that we made. We're getting ready to make another one. I'll get you a copy of that when that comes out.
That'd be great.
Competitive sports. We've been in those city leagues for probably 8-9 years now. Brian's whole office is combined. We've got trophies all over it. We've won 2 years in a row, right?
We've won 2 years ago, and just recently, last Tuesday, we took second this year. So in the softball community program.
All right. So the kids they're earning the right to be able to get involved in some of the off-campus competitive sports.
Correct.
Okay.
The other thing that's even more important than all that stuff is humanitarian service that we give back to this community. We consider ourselves community-based, one foot in reality and one foot in therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really give back to this community. Last weekend was the official Ford Ironman competition, and our students that were, you know, at a trust level that we feel like we could take them out there, we're out there handing out water, cheering on the Ironman people, cleaning up after them. And they do that for just about everything that happens here. In St. George, we have the marathon. It's a qualifier for the Boston. We have the Huntsman World Senior Games. We have a kite festival. We have the national parks. We go in and clean the burn lines out so that there's a forest fire. It helps the firefighters. We are packing up food for in canneries and stuff so that they can be set aside and sent out to areas that get hit by some catastrophe. We actually are working on our own little what's called Red Rock Relief Fund, where we can have our own boxes of staple foods, water, 72-hour kits that we could just get ready to go and ship off to wherever it gets hit next.
Well, and I was going to say. Oh, I'm sorry. What I was going to say is that I know that when one of my people was in red in St. George, and one of the things that they saw, this is about the time of the Haitian earthquake, and at that time, I know you guys were preparing a lot of stuff, and I don't remember how much, but you guys had prepared just through your own group a huge amount. I mean, share with us how much it was, because I don't remember the exact amount, but I remember thinking that was great that your kids put that together so quickly.
Yeah, I can't remember how much it was for the Haitian, but for the tsunami, I know, and Samoa, it was 40 boxes of just clothing alone. That's not counting the water and everything else and money that we raised. So I don't think the Haitian tally has come in yet, so still ongoing.
Right. Well, and I know that's great. In fact, I also know that you guys also do, you know, for holidays and stuff like that, you guys set up food so that it's pretty much all comers can come in. And I know the food's good, too, because I've been there.
Yeah. The Thanksgiving dinner has been going on for 20-something years prior to us even having a treatment center. In the beginning, it was just for the homeless people and the snowbirds. There's a lot of snowbirds that live down here that are, you know, transients from colder weather to come down here because it's nicer in the winter. And it got to the point where now, on Thanksgiving, families just show up and college students. The mayor makes it a point to come here and eat. And it is. It's gourmet food. It's not just this soup line kind of food. We also provide a nice dinner for Christmas and a place where the local charities can have Santa Claus come here and drop off the gifts. So it's a nice environment. And the great thing about it is our kids get to see that. They get to see what they have at home and what these people don't have. And it's a really touching moment for them.
Well, and I agree. And it's also the culture of giving back. It's what they see. You know, and hopefully they then bring that back when they go back to their family and they see that what is successful with this program and what is successful with what they're learning is that there's a constant giving back. There's a constant helping your fellow man. And I think that's huge for these kids.
Exactly.
Now I was going to say you guys do outcome statistics and I know that's rare. I don't see it a lot with some of the programs. Share with us a little bit about the outcome statistics that you guys have gained, and not only the statistics themselves, but what some of the kids in general are saying and their particular comments.
Yeah, Alan, we do outcome statistics. We're still tallying that up as well. Currently, you know, we do a statistic form of test when they get here, while they're here, when they discharge, and after that as well. And so most of the kids, 85% of them are saying that they are enjoying their stay here. They enjoy staff. They enjoy the structure. They feel that the staff are competent, that they're getting the education that they need, that they're getting the mental health services that they need. And they enjoy the enrichment activities as well. The past, we've been tracking that. Probably the past 2.5 years, I believe, is we're getting close to that by Dr. Goff. He is the psychologist that is doing that, and he puts out a monthly form, statistic form, outcome form that rates us as staff and as a program, which I feel is great information for us to improve on, find out what our strengths and limitations are. We would like to be a little bit stronger in the post-care is what we're working on, because the information we've received needs to be, you know, somewhat stronger in that area, but it's great information for us to grow as a program.
Oh, absolutely, and it's the only way you can is to have that kind of feedback. I think it's great. Now we're going to take a break, but we will be right back, and we are talking about residential treatment. Okay. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with.
in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back. We are talking about residential treatment. And Brian, give us an example of a student's daily schedule. I know that when I'm talking with parents, when we're getting ready to transport a child to a program, that's one of the questions they have. They say, what is my child going to be doing all day? Break that down a little bit.
All right. That's a great question. I'd want to know that as well. They come here to Red Rock. Their daily schedule, day in the life of Red Rock, would look like they get up at 7 a.m. Some get up a little bit sooner, depending on if they want to exercise. That right's up to them. But typically 7 a.m., they get up and do the chores, morning meeting. Chores meaning make their bed, clean their living area. And then at 7:30, they do their community morning group and then head down to breakfast after that. Once breakfast is done, then they start school at 9 a.m., and they go from school from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., and they're in school there. They have their basic core standard classes there that's approved by the state of Utah. And then after school ends, they clean up their school environment, their classroom, and then they enter into a positive peer culture group that lasts for an hour and a half, 90 minutes. Once that group is over, there is a little bit of free time, and then they attend dinner at 5, and then after dinner they have enrichment from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., and again, in those enrichment activities are a few things that Todd had mentioned, where they're doing their laundry, they are competing in sports, they are going to recording school, dance, art, doing some of the Red Rock Relief, AA groups. There's a variety of activities for them to do between those hours of 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Once that is done, they're headed back up to their unit where they prepare for shutdown, meaning they start to shower from 8 to 8:30, have their community evening group, their what we call a highs and lows group after they shower, and then at 9 p.m., from 9 to 9:30, any cleanup, follow-up, downtime, reading time, and then lights out are at 10 p.m.
All right. Now, and you mentioned the time between about 6 and 8 p.m. Now, is it depending on what a student's going through, would depend on if they're going to be in either a group therapy, an individual therapy, or maybe substance abuse counseling? I mean, does it just depend on who it is?
Well, we have our positive peer culture group prior to 6 p.m., so okay. Everybody is involved in that. And then between the hours of 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. enrichment times, depending on the schedule that you're on, each student will be, or unit would be able to move through a dance program, a recording program, an art program. So, you know, as far as if they're on, we don't go on a level system here. We feel that if the kid or the student is appropriate enough to be in the group, we'll put them in the group because that may be helpful for them to be able, that may be help them manage maybe what they're struggling with, be able to express themselves a little bit more while they're in that setting. In the other groups, such as NAAA groups or in addictions groups that we may have or any other type of group, they are identified, those students are identified in the treatment team that we have weekly that we feel that would be beneficial for them to attend that group.
Right, so that's kind of what I was getting at. It's not one of those situations, and again, this goes to questions that parents have asked me. They said, well, you know, if my son doesn't have that particular issue, you know, does he still have to go through that particular type of counseling or treatment? And from what I hear you saying, it's no, it's identified, and those that fall into that category do. Those that don't may deal with other things.
That's correct. We identify and we individualize the treatment that works for the student and the parent. And there are times that, you know, parents and students disagree with where they should be, and that's a therapeutic issue that we work through. But it's individualized, and we put them in the appropriate groups that they need to be in.
Now, what's the age range of the kids you're working with?
We work from the ages of 12 to 18 years of age.
Now, is that in both programs?
Both programs. Red Rock is a co-ed program. Falcon Ridge is females only.
All right. And one of my main things has to do with aftercare. What about family therapy? And again, one of the stories I think everybody's heard me say on this show is, you know, the situation where I have, you know, we've brought somebody in, they've gone through the program, they've gone back into the home, and there hasn't been a change in the home. And so then if there's any sort of issues then with the child afterwards, the parent's thought is, well, maybe the program failed. Now, what about family therapy from the standpoint that the family gets on board so that the child goes right from your structure into another structure that's now working along the same lines?
Yeah, and that's a great question and a great essential piece to all treatment, is our belief. We're a family treatment center, so you know, when the student comes on board here, is admitted into our program, the whole family is admitted into the program. And what we mean by this is that we have our weekly family therapy calls, and we also have what's called family packets, therapeutic packets, that the family has to work on as well as the student, and they advance through the program or move through the program congruently through the program, working on their, you know, therapy packets. So if a student wants to move on to his second therapy packet, he cannot do that unless his parent has finished packet number one. So the family or the student can hold each other up, but they have to move congruently through the program on their family therapy packets. Otherwise, one person can hold up the movement of treatment.
Well, give us an idea of what the parents are doing along these lines.
In those family packets, the parents are, the first family packet is introducing them to positive peer culture, the system, orienting the family to Red Rock Canyon School. And so they're learning the language that we use here, the therapeutic language, the positive peer culture language, so that when they're on the phone or when the parent comes out for a family session, you know, the terms that are being used and the dialogue that's taking place, there's a common ground there, so they're not, you know, communication's not kind of conflicting with each other. So that's the first packet that they go through. They'll go through some trust. They'll go through some boundaries. So they all work together expressing their feelings. There's a lot of little projects and worksheets in there and activities that the parents have to do and the student has to do. And then they compare notes while on the phone or if they're here live for a session. And it brings up great dialogue for these parents and students to bring out some of those issues that have kind of been, you know, the core problem of conflict or communication or whatever it may be.
So now, is this something that's getting parent and child both to take more responsibility for their part?
Oh yeah, it's you know, family reunification is our goal here. So it takes work. It's a dynamic. It's a system there between the student and the parent. And so working together on that and being able to own up to, you know, some accountability on both ends, I think is huge for the parents. You know, maybe they haven't. You know, for some reason or another, the parenting piece hasn't been there completely, and for them to be able to say that and voice that, I think is a great teaching moment for the student to realize that we're all not perfect, but, you know, as long as we're willing to put forth the effort and do the best we can, you know, for our student or child or for the parent, I think that's a great teaching moment.
Absolutely. Now, we're about to run out of time, but if anybody has additional questions or anything, give us the website or the phone number that they can contact if they have more questions in regards to what's going on at Red Rock Canyon.
The website, Alan, is www.redrockcanyonschool.com.
Okay. And the phone number?
It is 800-635-4441.
All right. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just ask for Todd. I'm available 24/7 almost.
Okay. So anybody, if you're up late at night, the old movies have run out, you've got nothing to do, Todd will be there 24/7. So just give him a call. Tell him I sent you. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. Wish we had a little more time. But keep doing what you're doing. I know that it's helping a lot of kids. I've been there myself.
All right. Thanks, Alan.
All right. Take care. Bye now. Now, again, if anybody didn't get that website and you want to send questions, you can also send them to us. As you know, ours is www.answers4thefamilyblog.com. You can also go to our blog. You can view details on upcoming guests, on future shows. You can comment on today's show, and I love your comments. You can also listen to any past shows. We're also looking for suggestions of any guests or topics. Remember, if it involves the family, if it can make family life better, let us know about it. We want to bring it, and we want to bring it to you, our listeners. Thank you so much.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.